And now, Don Blackwell.
One of the most sickening and repulsive sins in which mankind has ever engaged himself is that of homosexuality. You know, in past years, homosexuality is something that has been viewed as shameful and disgusting, and it still is by decent and moral people. But many have begun to accept it as an alternative lifestyle. And along with its acceptance, numerous homosexuals have begun to come out of the closet, as they use the phrase. That is, they have begun to openly admit to their sexual perversion. Today, homosexuality is more widely accepted than it has been in years past, but I believe that it's still generally abhorred. Today, it gets considerable support from the entertainment industry, and the news media certainly doesn't hesitate to further the homosexual agenda. In fact, today, we even have homosexuals in the national service of our country. And along with the homosexuals, some who are not homosexuals have joined the homosexuals in their fight for acceptance and rights. Some of the people that we would call straight, that is the heterosexuals, are fighting for the rights of the sexually perverted. I saw a bumper sticker one day that said something like this. It said, "I'm straight, but I'm not narrow-minded." I took it to mean that the person driving this car was personally a heterosexual. That is, he was straight, but that he did not oppose homosexuality. He was saying, "I'm not so narrow-minded as to believe that homosexuality is wrong, and I will not condemn the practice in someone else." He was likely saying, "I'm not so narrow-minded that I think I'm the only one who is right." But you know, the fact of the matter is, for those who are Christians, those who are members of Christ Church and who are adhering to New Testament principles, we must understand that there are certain things about which we must be narrow-minded. Now, let me define narrow-minded for you. One of the definitions given for narrow-minded, according to Webster, is limited in outlook. And Christians certainly must be limited in their outlook about some things, because there are many things that God has listed for which there is no room for variation. What I mean is that there are certain areas for which God has set limits, and He has said to depart from these limits is not acceptable. You see, God has determined that some things are wrong, and if we hold to the terms that He has established, then we will rule out anything else. And because of that, some will call us narrow-minded. If we do not accept homosexuality, some would say we're narrow-minded. If we do not accept sex before marriage, some would say we're narrow-minded. If we do not accept abortion, some would say we're narrow-minded. In fact, if we do not allow people to do whatever they want to do, some people would say that is narrow-minded thinking. But friends, a Christian, a New Testament child of God, should be narrow-minded. In fact, I think a Christian should be straight and narrow-minded. Now, I've made a little play on words, but if you'll look with me at Matthew chapter 7, 13 and 14, you'll see what I mean by this. Matthew 7 and verse 13, Christ said, "Enter ye in at the straight gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leadeth unto destruction, and many there be which go in thereat, because straight is the gate, and narrow is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it." You see, according to this verse, Jesus said that the road to heaven is straight, and it is narrow. And so we must be of a mind that is seeking after heaven. We must have reaching heaven as our ultimate goal. In other words, we must be straight and narrow-minded, or we must be seeking to walk the road that leads to eternal life. You know, during the life of Joshua, one of the great leaders of Israel, shortly before his death, Joshua exhorted the people, telling them to hold to the law of God. Joshua 23 and verse 6, he said, "Be ye therefore very courageous to keep and to do all that is written in the book of the law of Moses." Now listen to this. "That ye turn not aside therefrom to the right hand or to the left." In the next verse, Joshua told them not to intermingle with the heathen nations, not to accept their gods, not to serve them, but rather they were to serve the one God of heaven only. You see, Joshua apparently was very narrow-minded. He told them that they were to accept one way and to reject all other ways. Like Webster's dictionary said, they were to be limited in their outlook. And Joshua made it very clear they were not to turn to the right or to the left. Friends, Joshua was narrow-minded. And aren't you glad that he was? You know, the point is, if I am going to be a faithful child of God today, then there are some things that I simply cannot accept. Now, the world may call me narrow-minded. It may call faithful Christians bigots or whatever, but we simply cannot accept sin. Now, let's get back to the subject at hand, and that is homosexuality. In this lesson and the continuing lesson, I'd like for us to study 3 points on this subject of homosexuality. The first deals with the so-called rights of homosexuals. The second one deals with the revelation of God concerning this subject. And the last deals with the responsibilities of Christians. Now, the first point, dealing with the rights of homosexuals. One of the goals of the homosexual movement today in the United States is to gain rights. They desire that the government would give them the legal right to get married. They desire that the government would protect them against job discrimination because of their homosexuality. And certainly a right that some homosexuals want is the right to adopt and to raise children. Homosexuals want these rights, but they're not just sitting back and hoping that someday they'll receive them. At least a percentage of them have been very busy in pursuing their goal. They are trying to infiltrate the minds of people with the propaganda that homosexuality is just an alternative lifestyle. That is, that it's not something sinful or disgraceful, but that it's just a lifestyle that is just like the one I've chosen. It's just simply a slightly different one. You see, homosexuals are also actively appealing to the U.S. government for help in their cause. They want legislation protecting them and their, quote, right to sin. If they can accomplish this, then they will have the law of the land on their side. And one way that they are working toward their goal is by voting for individuals for government offices, individuals who will further their agenda. Do you remember just a few years ago the fight over homosexuals in the military? I was on active duty military service at the time, and it was a dark day when this issue began to be pushed upon the military. Homosexuals want equal rights, is what they say. Now, some people are equating discrimination against homosexuals to discrimination against women and discrimination against African Americans. But friends, in reality, they are not at all the same thing. Because first, it is not a sin to be a woman. Homosexuality is a sin. It is not a sin to be an African American. But it is a sin to practice homosexuality. Secondly, whether a person is a woman or a man is not a choice that he or she makes. Whether a person is black or white or red or yellow is not a choice that he makes. But whether or not a person engages in homosexual activities is, however, a choice that he makes. Now, some would have you to believe that homosexuality is not a choice that you make. They would have you to believe that it is something with which you are born and over which you have no control. Now, I simply do not believe this. I don't believe the Bible teaches it. But I know this. Even if a person is born with homosexual desires, it is still a sin to give in to those desires. You know, all individuals have certain desires and face certain temptations that are wrong for them to give in to. But you know, the Bible does not treat homosexuality as a sickness. It does not treat it as a mental disorder. The Bible treats homosexuality as sin. Now, that brings us to our second point, and that's the revelation of God about this subject. The Bible does not treat homosexuality as a medical problem. It treats it as a moral problem. The Bible refers to homosexuality as vile affections in Romans 1, 26 and 27. Listen to that text. For this cause God gave them up unto vile affection. For even their women did change the natural use into that which is against nature. And likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one toward another. Now the Bible says vile affections. Listen to the definition of the word vile. Vile affections. Vile means morally base or evil, wicked, depraved, sinful. Definition number two, offensive to the senses or sensibilities, repulsive, disgusting. Definition number three, cheap, worthless. Definition four, degrading, lowly. Definition five, of poor quality, very inferior. Now that's Webster's. The phrase vile affections comes from a Greek phrase which means passions of dishonor. Now that's very interesting to me. When the Bible describes this sin of homosexuality, it comes from a Greek phrase that means passions of dishonor. Now, in addition to putting homosexuality into the category of vile affections, the Bible also calls it unnatural. In Romans 1:27, it is said that men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one toward another. Friends, homosexuality goes against nature. It is contrary to the physical design that God gave us. You know, Christ said to the Jews, "Have you not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave unto his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh?" But notice that. "Have you not read that he that made them at the beginning made them male and female?" Marriage and sexual relations are for a man and a woman, not a man and a man, not a woman and a woman. That is unnatural. God did not intend it that way. Now, a third description that God gives to homosexuality is unseemly. In the second half of Romans 1 and verse 27, God said, "Men working with men, that which is unseemly." Now, God calls the act of homosexuality unseemly. Now, what does that mean? I looked up the word unseemly in Vine's Expository Dictionary of New Testament Words. What I found there was very interesting. It said, "See shame." It referenced me to see the word shame, S-H-A-M-E. Persbacher's Greek lexicon said, "Indecency, infamous lust, or lewdness." Now, are you starting to get the idea of how God feels towards homosexuality? And we've only looked at one passage so far. Friends, in our next lesson, we want to continue this study of homosexuality, not to see what the world has to say about it, because that really doesn't matter, but to see what God has to say about the subject, to see what His Word, the ultimate authority for mankind, says about this particular sin.